Good morning and welcome to the Mesa City Council study session for May the 12th. I'd like to excuse Council Members Glover and Richens. The first item on our agenda is to review the agenda for our May 16th Council meeting. So Council, if you can please take a look at that. Agenda item 3 are various liquor licenses. 4 is a few purchase contracts. Is various resolutions.
Mayor, on 4G, I need to pull that item. We have a little bit of work to do and we'll bring it back next month, but we'll pull that item all together on the workstation.
Okay, thank you, Mrs. Kent. I should have noticed that Chris Brady is on at a conference today for city managers, so we're privileged to have Assistant City Manager Carrie Kent and also. There you go. All right. Agenda item 4. 5. All right. Agenda item 6 is various resolutions on amending the Mesa City Code. 7 is public hearings on some zoning ordinances, as is 8. And then 9 is a subdivision plat. There is an item not on the consent agenda, is to take have a public hearing on a Mesa Town Center Improvement District it's time for the annual assessment, so we have the public hearing to see if anyone wants to come in and talk to us about that. And then 11 is a public hearing on our utility rates, is that right? Okay. Should be a good meeting. Any need to take anything off the agenda that's not already on the consent agenda? All right, thank you. The next item then on the agenda for this meeting is to hear a presentation and discuss providing financial support to the Northern Arizona Forest Fund for high priority restoration projects on national forests in the Salt and Verde River watersheds. Gentlemen, welcome. We're looking forward to hearing your presentation.
Morning, Mayor and Council. I'm Dan Clevenger, Water Resources Department Director. With me today, our guests are Marcus Seelig with the National Forest Foundation and Ron Claywitter with SRP. We were approached by SRP several months ago to join a partnership on forest and watershed health initiatives. To address forest restoration in Arizona, there's a direct connection, and Mesa's interest in this is healthy forests provide good quality water to our water treatment plants. So when there's difficult issue for us when we get water that comes from after a forest fire and there's a significant rainstorm, it creates a lot of problems for us with soot, ash, and just in mud. It's very difficult for us to treat. So healthy forests help us in water treatment. There's a number of cities in the valley have already committed some funding for a program you'll hear about today. This morning, we'll look for council support. This is a program that is supported by the Water Resources Department, so we'd like to get your support as well. Marcus and Ron will go through their presentation. We'll answer questions along the way or at the end, whatever you prefer. So I'll turn it over to you folks.
Great. Thank you.
Good morning, Mayor, Councilman, staff. Thank you. Appreciate the opportunity to talk with you today. So I'm Marcus Seelig with National Forest Foundation, and have with us Ron Clawiter as well from Salt River Project. Ron's going to start off talking a little bit about water supplies and where they come from, and then I'll take it over and talk about the Northern Arizona Forest Fund and how that operates.
Thank you.
Thanks, Marcus. Make sure you can hear me. So thank you all for allowing me to speak with you today. I was actually born in Mesa, so it's nice to return home. I now live in Phoenix, but I'm going to be talking about basically where the maybe I'll return permanently someday, right. But at this point, not yet. Yeah. So again, thank you for allowing me to talk about where SRP's water supplies come from. So I like to start with this historic map just because it gives an overview of SRP's water service territory, 300 square mile area in the Phoenix Valley, and we have 1,300 miles of canals and laterals, 200 plus groundwater pumps, and we use this system to deliver water from the Salt and Verde Rivers. So you can see in the upper right-hand portion of this map, you can see the Verde River kind of going straight up the middle and the Salt River going up and to the right. And we have within these two watersheds that take about 13,000 square miles, this is where the water is collected for these rivers. So I really like this map. This is just a different perspective from the one I just showed you. This is really good because it shows how much land area it takes to actually collect the water that we deliver in just the 300 square mile service area. So 13,000 square miles of land to collect the water that's delivered in the valley. And this map is really good too because it shows why we've chosen to partner with the National Forest Foundation on so many different projects. You can see the land, this map basically shows the land ownership throughout the Salt and Verde Rivers. Within the area, about 90% of the lands are federal lands, and most of those lands are national forest lands. So when we're concerned about watershed health, we have to work and create partnerships with the owners of those lands to make sure they're managed in ways that are good for water resources. So within these two watersheds, we have six dams and reservoirs, and one additional one, which we're also partnering with National Forest Foundation to restore and prevent catastrophic fires from damaging. This whole service area, or these reservoir systems, have a total system capacity of about 2.3 million acre feet of water. We deliver about 1 million acre feet a year. 55,000 acre feet of that goes to Mesa, roughly. So these reservoirs are really important to make sure we have water supplies in the future. They're also helpful for kind of buffering some of the impacts from wildfire, but we can't buffer all of them, as I'll point out in a few slides. So why are we here today? We're talking about forest health, but how does that translate to watershed health? How does that translate to sustainable water supplies? Well, the upper left-hand picture in this shows what forests looked like in early European settlement, late 1800s. Big, kind of park-like, big trees, grasses. You could pretty much drive a truck between the trees that you're seeing. Well, today, the forests have become very overgrown, primarily because fires have been suppressed as soon as they start over the last 100-plus years. And so today, there's a lot of areas you can't even walk through because the forest is so dense. So when we used to see fires start back in the early 1900s, they'd be smaller fires, they'd burn low to the ground, they'd prune back the trees, rejuvenate the soils, and they played a strong role in ecosystem health and watershed health. But today when fires start, because of the density of trees, we actually see the fires explode and look like the bottom right. And that's really what we've gotten used to seeing fires in the news. Rodeo Chediscai, Wallow Fire, fires like that just are massive in size, but also massive in intensity and flame length. These are 100 plus foot flames. So over time, these fires have grown in size, intensity, but also in frequency. So in the 1980s, we saw about 85,000 acres burn in and around the Salt and Verde watersheds. In the 1990s, we saw about 230,000 acres burn. And since 2000, we've seen almost 2 million acres burn in the watershed. And almost 1 million acres was just from two fires alone, Rodeo Chediscai and the Wallow Fire. So these fires have really detrimental impacts to water supplies. And I worked with our,
GIS folks?
GIS, yeah. I always want to say geohydrologists because I work with the water people a lot. But our geographers actually helped me make this map, which I think is really helpful for Mesa to see some of the impacts. This is just one fire, the Sunflower Fire, relatively small in terms of fires we see today, about 18,000 acres. And this fire started in the lower Verde River watershed, and it drained into an area actually below our reservoir system. So we really had no buffering for the impacts of this fire. And if you follow the black lines down, you can see it flow into the Verde River, then into the Salt, and then it follow it through the canal system where the ash and debris actually made it into the city and made it to at least four water treatment plants. Phoenix Mesa Val Vista was the first one that saw pretty much the nastiest water. And then it also made it down to Tempe South, Tempe Martinez, and also all the way down to Glendale Cholla at the end of the Arizona Canal. So we did work with Mesa and other city partners to try to manage these impacts to make it as treatable as possible. But really below the reservoir system, we have almost no control. So what we had to do was actually spill that water. So we couldn't put it to use. We had to do some exchanges with CAP in the short term to make sure that the water would be treatable at those treatment plants. And if you look in the upper left-hand portion of this picture, those little jar samples were actually taken. The it's kind of small here. The left jar is typical turbidity or water, kind of the water quality coming through the system. The center one was a sample taken from the Verde River following the Sunflower fire. You can see it looks like the coffee I drank before I came in and talked to you today. And then the far right looks, or is actually a sample from Val Vista. So you can see the delivery quality following that fire before we were able to adapt was very difficult to deal with. So preventing these fires is I shouldn't say easier, but is something that is worth doing to prevent these impacts, because once they happen, they're very hard to control in the system. So turn it over to Marcus.
Great. Thanks, Sean. And it actually does my heart good to hear an economist and water person describe forest health so well. I'm a forester by training, and Ron described it as well as I could have. So it means that people are getting this and understanding the importance of watershed health and forest health. I'm with National Forest Foundation, and we are a congressionally chartered nonprofit organization. So we were set up in the early 1990s with a pretty distinct mission. It was to enhance national forest system lands and to engage Americans and communities in the enjoyment and stewardship of those lands. We really pride ourselves in getting on-the-ground work done. So I have some of the numbers up here of what we've gotten done nationally as we work to improve national forests. But we really pride ourselves on that on-the-ground work and accountability. When we look at Arizona and see the problems that Ron just described, we know that we needed to do something. And so we started figuring out how we could play a role in improving watershed and forest health here. And these are the items that we looked at. We said, you know, if we're going to come in and do something, we need to find the right partners. SRP is the best partner we have nationally because our interests are so closely aligned. They want healthy forests. They want healthy watersheds, as do we. So they were the right partner to come together with on this effort. And it was developed by both of us. We then said, well, let's figure out how we can get that on-the-ground work done. Let's identify some projects that are ready to go, that have gone through all of the planning and permitting that are required to do work on national forests. So we work with the U.S. Forest Service to do that. We then want to build private investment, and that's part of why we're here today. There's a lot of downstream beneficiaries that benefit from healthy watersheds and healthy forests, and we want to work with them and have them help invest in getting those on-the-ground projects done. And that's the acceleration of treatments. So we take the funds that we raise and put them on the ground to get work done that makes the watersheds healthier. We then also want to connect those successes to the local community and let people understand the value of this work and why these funds are being put to work. So we do a lot of communications efforts that I'll talk about to help people understand why you need a healthy watershed and what a healthy watershed looks like. And then lastly, we want to build capacity. You know, we're going to do this for the indefinite term, but we know it's not going to last forever. When this effort stops, if it stops, we want to make sure that we have more capacity in the area to do this kind of work and continue it, because this isn't a one-time thing. This is going to go on forever and ever, and we need to keep building the capacity to do the work that needs to be done. So what do we do up there? There's four main types of projects. One is sediment and erosion management. So Ron talked about wildfires and the sedimentation, the erosion that happens after those. We also have a lot of sediment and erosion that happens before fires too, primarily off roadways, poorly designed roadways, poorly maintained roadways, trails, areas that have been denuded of vegetation for one reason or another. We're working on supporting activities that keep that sediment in place. It's the number one water quality issue in Arizona, sediment and waterways, and so we want to keep as much sediment out in unburned landscapes and burned landscapes. Next is improving stream and wetland ecosystems. These are our natural conduits. It's the green infrastructure that delivers water to the pipes and to the reservoirs. We want to make sure they're healthy too, so they're filtering water and they're delivering clean water. Forest thinning and prescribed burning. This is what Ron talked about. We need to reduce the fire risk so that we don't have burnt landscapes that are adding ash and sediment to the reservoirs and to the streams. So we do a lot of prescribed burning and primarily hand thinning activities that can't be commercially done otherwise. So they're more expensive, but they're usually very important in critical areas like steep slopes. So we're supporting those activities. And then lastly, to be really comprehensive about watershed health, We're looking at other activities that improve habitat, but also revegetate areas after burns and denuded areas. So we consider those kind of a bucket catch-all of comprehensive watershed restoration for habitat improvement and revegetation. Just a quick explanation of the mechanics of how this works. Each year, we work with the U.S. Forest Service to get a list of potential ready-to-go projects. We then work with an advisory council made up of nonprofit groups, local government, state government, business investors, to figure out what we're going to invest the money in each year. We develop a portfolio of projects. We then work with our partners that have invested, put those funds to work. We get our work done in three ways, and I'll give them to you in order of preference. First, we like to make grants to local nonprofit groups to do the on-the-ground work. That's our preferred way. In a lot of situations, that's not possible because of the type of work. So we also work with private contractors, and we always prefer local contractors to build up that capacity. And then if a nonprofit or a local contractor can't do it, we can give the money directly to the Forest Service to do that work, mainly with prescribed fire. They're the ones who can do that. Excuse me. Then lastly, we monitor our projects and report back on them. So we want our investors to know exactly what was done with the money and how it benefited the watershed. So we put out an annual report each year that explains all that, and we're also happy to provide any interim reports as well if people are interested. But we track everything on what's done. So, successes to date. It's been about a year and a half since we launched this. We've gotten a lot of partners involved, corporations, local governments, foundations. We have almost $2 million invested and some great partnerships with not only our investors, but with local on-the-ground partners as well. In 2015, we did two projects, Oak Creek Erosion Control, which looked at roads, and Upper Beaver Creek, which supported thinning and burning activities to reduce fire risk. Good successes. We got thousands of acres burned, miles and miles of roads improved. In 2016, we are tackling six projects across all five forests in northern Arizona, doing a mix of those activities that I talked about. These are almost all underway. We have one that has not been started yet, but will be started in the next month. And so we're going to get all six projects done this year. We're also, as I said, communicating. We want to connect people to their watersheds. And so we've partnered with companies like Pepsi to get volunteers on the ground so their employees understand the value of what's happening. We've partnered with Santan Brewing and Crescent Crown Distributing to run a campaign that we called Tap to Top to talk about that beer actually comes from water that comes from your watershed. And if you drink beer and like beer, then you should care about your forests. And it's actually amazing how well that resonates.
The more beer you drink, the better it sounds.
We partnered with the Phoenix Open this year to show a video on their Jumbotrons and had a booth at the expo. So we're looking for these opportunities throughout the valley to connect people to their watersheds as well. But as I said, the meat of it is really these local projects. So what do you get if you invest in it? You get these measurable results that we'll report to you. You get a resilient landscape that delivers dependable water supplies. The connection's pretty clear. And with that, I'll wrap it up and take any questions that you guys may have.
Thank you, Mr. Luna.
Just a real quick question. Where do you get the nonprofit groups that come in and help with your forests?
A lot of them are already here. There's groups like Arizona Conservation Corps. There's several Friends of the Forest groups. There's Trout Unlimited. Those types of local groups as well. They're here, and we're helping them build their capacity. We give them grants, and one of the things that we're trying to do is get out-year funding. So we're asking everyone who commits to try to commit for at least 3 years. And what that does is give us the ability to plan out our projects, get strategic with what we're investing our money in, but it also allows us to go to groups like Arizona Conservation Corps and say, we're gonna give you funding for the next couple years. So if you can build up your capacity, hire more staff, we're committed to giving you that money, which is what a lot of local stewardship groups don't have now. And so they're going year to year and they're scared to build up their capacity because they don't know if they're got the grants. And what we wanna do is provide that long-term sustainable funding that they don't have.
Yes, Mr. Thompson.
What's the current health of the forest right now?
Poor. The forests in Arizona in general are in some of the worst shape in the country. It's because and as Ron explained, it's because they're so, historically, they're fire dependent. They used to have these fires that moved through every 5 to 10 years that kept them healthy. When we stopped that 100 years ago, it put them on such a bad trajectory that where we used to have, as Ron said, 25 to 50 trees an acre, we have 1,000 trees an acre. So they're just primed to burn. I mean, it's like having each tree you can compare to a fuel canister just being placed around the landscape. And when a fire comes, they just explode. So they're in really bad shape. And there's some large-scale efforts that are going on to fix that, like the Four Forest Restoration Initiative, which is working but not going as fast as a lot of people have wanted. The work that we're doing complements that larger landscape scale work, but that's being supported mainly by commercial activities, and what we're doing is those non-commercial activities that complement it.
Yeah, I volunteer with a group called Trail, Tonto Recreational Alliance, which is a lot of, I don't know if you know them or not, we're a group of OHV enthusiasts that want to protect the forest because we know that it's a finite asset. So I'd be interested in putting our group in touch with your group and seeing if there's something we can do as well, because I know the importance of our watershed. Alex and I both, he used to, and I am currently on the AMWA board, so I work with Dan quite often on some of the water issues, and I know the importance of our watershed. But just out of curiosity, does any of the state funding through the OHV sticker program, does any of that roll to you, or is it primarily just being used in state parks?
Yeah, I'm not exactly sure where it's all being used. I think it's mainly at parks, and I think it's also on trails, exclusively on trails. So we haven't partnered with that program. We'd definitely be interested in partnering with the group for anything from volunteer opportunities to spreading the message, or even, you know, financial partnerships as well. But that's exactly what we're looking for. We are working on receiving some state money, but it's coming through the Game and Fish for habitat improvement. They obviously, wildlife benefits from the projects we're doing as well. So they're looking at investing in this program too, but not through the sticker program.
Yeah, sometimes though the Game and Fish kind of shoot everybody in the foot too, because they, you know, they end up blocking off a lot of the either the trust land or the federal lands, and then you end up with this overgrowth. And it sets it up for being prime tinderbox for fire. So, you know, sometimes government's not the solution; they're usually the problem. And I think we can clearly say that on the forest, it has been that way for 100 years. And so, hopefully, there can be some change. I know that Senator Worsley has been working on some legislation over the past to utilize some of the trees and fallen trees up there as biomass and so forth.
And Senator Worsley absolutely gets it with their business as well too, with Novo Power. So they're on it. Yep. Okay.
Thank you. I think Mr. Fender has a comment.
Just quickly, so I know in addition to the overgrowth and the lack of thinning that's going on, our problem is also bark beetle and a decades-long drought, which is hard to deal with in some areas. I'm presuming, since we're here with SRP and the City of Mesa, your foundation's been well vetted, has the best of reviews, and lots of the money goes to what you're saying that happens, and sounds like you're great folks. Question would be, what kind of commitment are you looking financially from the city and others? And maybe you were going to get to that, so look forward to that.
Yeah, Mayor and Councilmember Finter, maybe I can address that. You saw a lot of the sponsors already, a lot of the partners on one of the slides. Locally here in the Valley, they've already aligned Glendale, Scottsdale, and Phoenix. Glendale's committing $75,000 over 3 years, so $25,000 a year. Scottsdale's committing $120,000 over 3 years. Phoenix is committing $600,000 over 3 years. If this is a program that council would like to support, I'd suggest something on the order of a Glendale or a Scottsdale, $30,000 a year. This wouldn't be any new authorization we need from council. We can handle this, absorb that within our budget, and our first commitment would come out of next fiscal year. And I would propose that we just use some of our chemical budget that we would use at the Val Vista plant, because that's really how we treat this water, and it takes more chemicals when we have a problem, forest fire, et cetera.
Okay. Thank you. So this will come up in budget discussions for the following budget year.
Well, right? We'd come back probably in a few weeks. We would like probably a resolution of showing our commitment of support. It's already in our existing, the budget has to be approved. So if you approve the budget, it's already within our existing baseline budget to do that. So, but I think they do want a resolution of support.
Yeah, we typically like to have some type of commitment in place. Obviously, understanding that future year budgets would be contingent on approval as well. But yeah.
So, Mayor, we could get that to the council prior to the break, the summer break. So we'd be in alignment then.
Thank you, Mr. Cavanaugh, and then Mr. Thompson.
I think this is certainly a worthy project to support, and I'm just wondering if how, other than money, what else can we do in terms of publicizing the situation, seeking support from nonprofits and other members of the community? Do you have suggestions for community education program outreach that we might be able to use our own social media and resources that we have with the city to either to alert residents that just because you live in a city, you need to pay attention to what's going on in the rest of the state because it affects your public health, safety, and welfare here, even if you never go to a forest?
Mayor, Vice Mayor, there is one thing I've already gotten from SRP, and we were kind of waiting to have this discussion, is a short video that we could play on Channel 11 educating folks. It's something I had given to Carrie already. I think that would be appropriate for one thing.
Yeah, and social media is obviously a great way to get that out, and we have a large social media base too, and we could kind of partner on that. Some other areas, we haven't actually done this with any of the Valley cities, but we could also do bill inserts as well, too, a little flyer that explains the benefits of it as well is another way to get the message out.
Yes, Mr. Luna. Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Thompson, then Mr. Luna. I apologize.
And I'm fine, you know, rolling it something into your budget, Dan. It's because I know the turbidity issues from when the Sunflower Fire took place, and I saw, you know, well, where I ride, we'd have to cross a tributary to the Verde, and that thing was just black muck from all of the ash that came down. And eventually, it does work its way into our water supply, and it just eats up our filters and our system. And so, anything that Alex and I were talking earlier, sometimes it's hard to convince our citizens that we should spend their tax dollars in Northern Nevada or. Northern Arizona or in the forest, but when you do look at the ramifications of what those fires do and to our water supply, I think it's important.
Right. Mayor, Councilmember Thompson, the fire you mentioned at Val Vista had a lingering effect for a period of a week and a half, 2 weeks, and that would translate to a lot of additional chemicals just to get the particulates to settle out. On the order of perhaps $80,000, and Mesa's share to that would be over $30,000 just for that one fire event.
Yes. I appreciate that Stephanie Navarro is here from SRP. If you haven't done it, and I don't know how open this is, but the watershed tour that they do through SRP, because you really have an understanding of the symbiotic relationship between our forests and our watershed. Going through the Verde Valley and the Salt River Valley is real important. And so you really grasp an understanding why we would need to protect our forests and why we want to make sure that we protect our waterways. So, you know, I've had an opportunity to participate in that twice, and so I appreciate SRP and their support on it.
Well, personally, I'm on board as well. I think it's fun to talk to people when I travel out of state. They assume that Mesa and Arizona is very much in the same category as California when it comes to water issues. And it's fun to explain to them, no, we have, for decades, we've realized that we're in a desert and we have this thing called Salt River Project and this thing called the Central Arizona Project. And we are very connected to the forests and the watershed. And this is something that has distinguished Arizona from our neighbors for decades. And so it's important that that the modern urban dwellers of the valley remind ourselves of the strong connection we have to the watershed and to the northern parts of our state and how dependent we are on them for our existence. So anyone who thinks that it's a distant connection between a healthy forest and turning on your tap in Mesa just doesn't get it. So. Thank you for this reminder, and I'm happy to join with Phoenix and Glendale and Scottsdale and Crescent Crown Distributors, especially, to support this very smart project. So, and I agree with it. It'd be fun to find other ways. Certainly financially, I think it's important that we participate. But, you know, we're a city of 500,000 people. We got a lot of folks that care about the forest. If we can find ways to get involved in the actual forest thinning projects, we've got a lot of scouts and other organizations that it would be fun to not just write a check, but to find ways to get more actively involved. So thank you for bringing this to us. We're, it sounds like we're very excited, and there's a lot of support to do this. So we'll look forward to getting a resolution on our calendar.
Yes, sir.
And look forward to supporting it. So thank you for the presentation, gentlemen.
Great. Thank you all so much. Really appreciate it.
You bet. Thank you.
Thank you.
The next item on our agenda is information pertaining to job order contracting projects. Council, any questions regarding those items? Hearing none, the next item would be approval of minutes from the executive session held on March 31st.
Second.
Thank you. There's a motion and a second. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. That passes. Next item five is to acknowledge receipt of minutes from a self and insurance trust fund board and band verifying insurance licenses. Is there a motion to that effect? Thank you. And a second. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Thank you. That passes. Item six, acknowledge receipt of minutes of various boards and committees. Is there a motion? Thank you. And a second. Mr. Luna?
I don't think the EDAB board, the minutes came through. Well, it didn't in my computer. It was like 1-2 and then skipped 1-8. Is that correct?
I think it's missing a page.
Missing a page.
Okay.
Or did they just meet and approve the minutes? It was like a...
should we remove... Let's remove EDAB because there appears to be a question regarding that, and make sure that we have a complete set of those minutes, and then we'll approve those later. Okay. Are there minutes other than EDAB? Is there a motion to do that? Thank you. In a second. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Thank you. That passes. Next item, hear reports on meetings and conferences attended. I would like to note that this I've had a neat experience this week. I did a ride along with our CCV units, our community care unit. So I think probably everyone here already has done that. This was my first opportunity. We brag about those units a lot, and we talk about it a lot, and I just realized I didn't have a lot of personal experience, so I tried to take care of that this week, and I couldn't have been more impressed. As you know, we have both a community care unit that responds to low acuity medical claims, but also a mental health unit, and that's what I did last night, and that was, as you know, accounts for a large percentage of our 911 calls, and so it was... It's always fun to see when we are doing something really, really well and something that saves money and is a national model. So that was a great experience. And then also a day ago, I had my first tour of our crime lab, and again was reminded that we literally are the best at that as well. So we have a lot to be proud of in our public safety departments, and I was reminded of that this week. Mr. Kavanaugh.
Thank you, Mayor. I just want to... comment that I, along with you, attended the graduation of the Mayor's Youth Committee, and I just want to commend you and your staff for really continuing to develop a great program for our high school students. I heard a lot of feedback from throughout the year with the great experience that the students have had, and I want to congratulate you and your staff for offering this program, which is very meaningful to our students. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your help during the year for supporting those activities so well. Any other reports, gentlemen? If not, moving on to item eight, scheduling of meetings and general information. Ms. Kent.
Mayor and Council, we have a ribbon cutting ceremony to celebrate the improvements that are being made to Mendoza Field today at 10 at Guerrero Rotary Park, which is located at 205 West 8th Avenue this morning. We have a study session and council meeting on Monday. Study session will start at 5:15. And then Vice Mayor, I just wanted to start promoting your coffee with a council member or coffee with the Vice Mayor next Friday at 7:30 at the Fiesta District PD station at 7:30.
Right, and just to clarify the topic of that, Commander Cost is going to be doing an update of his Fiesta substation area, and also Ila Garza is going to be talking and giving an update on the work he's been doing at code compliance since being assigned to work with that unit. And I think both of these items have been the subject of a lot of requests from residents to hear, but our coffees are open to all residents, but we'll be in the community room at the Fiesta substation next Friday.
That's all I have.
Great. Thank you. Mr. Thompson.
Mayor, would it be possible to maybe Monday, if not now, get a update on House of Refuge and where that is, and what's going on with that?
Yeah, obviously it needs to be on our agenda. I think there's...
So Put it on the study session agenda for an update.
Thank you. Okay, we'll look forward to hearing more about that on Monday. Council, any other items of discussion? If not, I'd entertain a motion to adjourn. Thank you. In a second, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Thank you. We are adjourned.